Welcome to the Dangerous Men Podcast, where we fight for all young men to be free. I'm your host, Lowell Seashore, and today I have a co-host, Aaron Sorensen. Hi, Aaron.
Hey, thanks for having me.
What would you do, or what would you say, if someone called you up and 15 minutes ago and said, hey, why don't you come be a co-host on a podcast? Get over to my house right now. What would you think?
I would say yes, right away.
And then you
and be very afraid.
And then you showed up with your coffee.
Well, yeah. I only say yes. I would only say yes to a certain person.
Yeah, that.
So it says a lot about you.
Yeah. Good. All right. Today, our special guest is Cam. Cam is on the phone with us from Bloomington, Illinois. Hi, Cam.
Hey, Lowell.
So yesterday we talked, and you had an awesome story about Officer Boot Camp for the Marine Corps.
Yeah, Officer Candidate School, actually. They call it OCS.
Yeah, that's it. I'd like you to tell me the story again, because it was really cool what God does.
Yeah, absolutely. For the last couple of years, I've felt like a pull towards the military. I didn't really have an affiliation with any branch, and I got connected really through the Lord, opening some doors for me to get to Marine Corps OCS. And with a lack of affiliation also comes just ignorance of what I was getting myself into. Certainly ignorance can be bliss, but definitely wasn't in this scenario. With everything coronavirus, it's a 10-week program, and we spent the first 2 weeks in a quarantine. That's about 14 days I spent kind of in like a dorm room. Of those 14 days, I probably went outside 5 times.
So what did you do? Just lay around your room?
Yeah. Laid around my room, a lot of Netflix, read a lot of books. Thankfully, it was a 2-person room. There were some guys who their roommates, you know, got sick, or they tested positive for corona, left, and whatever. Some guys didn't have a roommate. Thankfully, I would say by the Lord's grace, I did have a roommate. I think that was the Lord holding me accountable there, a little Dangerous Men action, just having someone else present to, you know, help me walk the line.
Yeah.
Also keep me sane, because I would have gone crazy 14 days in a room by myself.
How did you eat? Did they bring you food?
Yeah, they would bring you food. I did. So I would go outside of the room for the first week, it was all box chow is what they call it. And that's basically
gross.
Either a ham or turkey sandwich, a hard-boiled egg. For breakfast, it would be 3 hard-boiled eggs. And so I never ate the hard-boiled eggs. I didn't want to risk it.
Risk what?
If you saw the hard-boiled eggs, you'd know what I mean.
Okay.
Yeah. Some guys did, and it made the room smell interesting. But
okay.
Yeah. I definitely steered clear of those. And it was, you got pretty sick of deli sandwiches there for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And then they introduced us to a hot meal once a day, which was usually dinner. And that also meant we got to exit the room, go down to the kind of the lobby area where they would have a little chow line. You'd cycle through that, and then you'd head back upstairs.
And then when it was over, what happened?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when that 2 weeks was over, they get us on buses, and they took us to the part of the base where OCS actually happens. You know, we pull up on the tarmac, the blacktop, and sergeant instructors coming in, and they're screaming at you, and, you know, get off of the bus now, like in your face. You've got all of your crap from the clothes and stuff from the 2 weeks and for the whole 10 weeks that you're trying to gather up and get off the bus as fast as you can. And it real exciting. Definitely the whole time I'm thinking, I'm so glad to be out of that room. You know, nothing could be worse than that.
Yeah.
Little did I know. I spent the first few days, you kind of have like an in-processing. They're not really hazing you yet. And then they introduce you to your sergeant instructors. They call it platoon staff. And that was a trip. I tell you what, I think anyone could do individually on your own some of the hazing stuff that they would do. And hazing sounds so negative, but it's better than using the word abuse.
yeah, that would be better.
Yeah.
Psychological.
Some of the stuff that you would have happen to you, anyone could do that on your own. It's, you know, you can take being screamed at, or you can take having to eat a meal, and especially in that first phase, which was about a week and or week and some change, they're really laying it on thick, really trying to weed guys out. So they're just on you 24/7. Your schedule is not your own. Like, someone else is planning it from 5 a.m. to 9 o'clock at night. And even when you get into bed at night, you're not, for the first 5 minutes, you're supposed to lie at attention. So just like little stuff like that, that's just meant to strip away any independence that you had. You're not really allowed to talk during the day. You get yelled at if you're just chatty Cathy with the guy next to you. Who knows what else would happen. So it's like, your life is so different, and it's so different from any guy who's listening to this thinking, I may want to go in the military. That's not really what the military is like. This is just meant to weed out anyone who doesn't make the cut kind of deal.
Are guys quitting?
That's a great question, Aaron. It leads into the next part of the story. I wanted to quit. We got 3 days in, and I thought, this is ridiculous. I don't even want – like, I the Lord kind of opened doors for me to be here. I don't really want to be a Marine that bad. Why am I here? Let's just get out of here. I kind of tactfully was looking for an opportunity to speak with the platoon commander, who's a captain, he's a little bit nicer than my platoon sergeants. He's not a instigator of the abuse. And so I was waiting for an opportunity to kind of like speak with him. And I got one. I said, sir, what is the process for dropping on request? They call it DOR. He kind of looked at me surprised. We're 3 days in and this kid's already quitting. And he said, well, he kind of laid it all out. And the long and short of it is, totally, you're allowed to drop. That's, they intend for people to drop. But you are contractually obligated to be there for 4 weeks. So I'd already been through 2 weeks. Half of that in the quarantine, but I had to stay for another 2 weeks. So it was like, I went there thinking, you know, I'm going home tonight. Nope, that didn't happen. I had to stay for another 2 weeks. And I remember just thinking, Lord, take me home. Like, I don't know what has to happen here for me to get out of here, break my leg, but I need to get out of here because this is just miserable. I mean, day in and day out harassment, and I'm sick of going in to eat a meal and having 5 minutes to eat a full meal with someone screaming at me while I'm doing it, that I'm not moving fast enough, and just wild. And so as those 2 weeks progress, just feeling real sorry for myself, real caught up in my own circumstances and the woefulness of it. Then they start to move into the next phase of training, which is where things get a little bit more relaxed, would be a deceiving word, but the instructors kind of take a step back, and it's a little bit more on they call you candidates, the officer candidates. It's more on you guys to take responsibility. So you're holding each other accountable. So it isn't as much people screaming at you. You get maybe 5 more minutes to eat instead of, so now you got 10, which is great. And I started to think maybe I can do this, but it at the same time, still kind of miserable, still wanting to go home. So we get to towards the end of that 2 weeks where my contractual obligation's about up. The platoon being what it is, you're in a squad bay with half the platoon. There's 2 squad bays, half the platoon on each side, and there's 35 guys. You're with each other 24/7. There's never a moment where you're alone, which really was miserable for me because it's not, I enjoy like a quiet time by myself. Even though I'm an extrovert, I need that time with the Lord so I can be a dangerous man. I need to just be able to invest in time with Jesus. Yeah, I got about 5 minutes each night for evening devotion. And in that's 5 minutes where I'm standing online with 34 other guys next to me. No privacy. Everybody knows everybody's business. So the end of this 2 weeks is coming up, and they call me and a couple of other guys who had decided they wanted to drop. They call me to see the captain. Of course, everybody knows when they've called, they say, McLean, come over here. So everybody knows something's up. My buddies are like, hey, like, what was that about? Are you thinking about quitting?
When did it come in where you had to tell the squad why you're there?
Oh, yeah. That was probably 2 or so days prior to the end of that two-week period, the waiting period. Our platoon commander, as kind of an exercise for him to get to know everybody and also to test out and see who is able to be a public speaker, because the platoon's about 70 guys. So he had all of us get in one squad bay, sit down, and answer a few different questions, one of which was, why are you here? Why did you choose to come to Marine Corps OCS? And, you know, you've got a lot of guys in there who are, to use the Marine Corps vernacular, they're very moto. They're motivated. They're up there saying, you know, I've wanted to be a Marine for years. My dad was a Marine. I got up there, and I said, I'll be honest. I'm here because I love Jesus, and he called me to be here. Like, the Lord, God is why I'm here.
What kind of looks did you get when you answered it that way?
Yeah, it was interesting. I wouldn't say like a bunch of like oohs and ahs, like total shock, but certainly some more scrupulous looks. But for the most part, guys in the military in general, but also in my platoon, they're aware of religion. And there's a handful of them who are Christians. That was a great support to have that support group of believers there with me. But it's not straight up foreign to them to be interacting or rubbing shoulders with Christians, which, I mean, there's a lot that could be said on that note in general.
How did it change your interactions with everybody?
I would say that they kind of remain the same. I'd led some Bible studies back in the back of the squad bay, so people already knew me as a Christian. And they, you know, as I said, with the evening devotion, they all knew that me, and I'm not the only one, there's a few other guys as well, but they can see that I'm reading my Bible at night when other guys are just kind of, they're there twiddling their thumbs, waiting for that 5 minutes to get up. Some guys are stretching, they're doing whatever, but it's a dead silent period, so no one's really talking.
Yeah.
So guys are kind of looking around, seeing what's happening. And I would actually have guys come, the guy next to me would come and kind of read over my shoulder and look at what I was reading, which was interesting, and I'll talk a little bit about that in a second here, because that really plays into what happened next. I share that. I get to the end of that 2-week period. My name gets called. The cat's out of the bag. Everybody knows McLean's quitting. That evening, we are in line for chow, and we're nut to butt. Everybody's on top of each other there, even though we're technically supposed to be like a 6 foot for COVID. We're all starving, so we're just trying to get every inch closer to the chow line as possible.
Quite a I haven't heard that military term since I was in the Army.
Yeah. The guy behind me, he's a believer, and you're not really supposed to talk in line, but we're all wearing masks, and everybody talks regardless of the rules. But so everybody's a little belligerent, and we're talking just softly, and he whispers in my ear, and I'm eyes front. You're not really allowed to turn around. And he says, McLean, are you really thinking about quitting? And I'm thinking to myself, yep, I definitely am. So I was like, yeah. He said, McLean, you can't quit. You brought God into this. And I was kind of like, oh boy. So I said, you know, I believe that God called me here, but at the same time, God can call you someplace for a season. In my head, my mind, my hamster wheel's spinning as fast as it can, because I'm like, how can I talk my way out of this and still
rationalize? Rationalize quickly.
Yeah, rationalize. How can I justify my decisions here? Because I've done a good enough job justifying it to myself in my head.
It was a good Bible Sunday school answer. Oh, God calls you into a season for a moment, and
exactly. How can I maintain my comfortability and yet at the same time still save face as a Christian and do what God calls me to do, which is terrible. So I kind of, you know, well, God called me here for a season, whatnot. And he paused. He said, McLean, when has anybody ever been called by God to quit? And I was just kind of like, ooh, okay. And then he really got me. Yeah, I know. You'd like him. Then he really got me, and he said, McLean, you feel humiliated, uncomfortable, and exhausted, like all of us do. He said, if God called you here, don't you think that's exactly where he wants you to be? That was what got me. Because I knew, I can't tell you how many times I've preached to friends, and I've even to myself, like, God calls us to uncomfortable situations because that is where we are most desperately in need of him. Or really, that is where we most realize our desperate need of him. I realize in him saying that, shoot, I can't leave. I'm thinking to myself, okay, this golly, why'd you have to go and ruin it for me? Yeah, I can't go. So that evening, they're preparing the guys who are dropping. They have us go and speak to the major. And the major is the guy in charge of the company. I was in Delta Company. I'm about to be going to talk to the major. My captain had said at one point, he said, you know, if you ever want to redact your drop on requests, you can. So the administration, they don't want you to quit, even though their actions may speak otherwise in trying to get you to quit. They want everybody to persevere for the most part. And so I said, sir, can I still redact my decision to drop? And he kind of looked at me and was like, of course. I said, that's what I'm going to do. And there was a little flash, I think, of he was pleased. He didn't want me to quit. I didn't really have any reason to quit. You know, the physical stuff, like I had not been singled out. I had everything going for me, which wasn't very hard to do. You just got to be squared away. So that was why they were confused why I would want to drop. He said, okay, well, you're still going to need to speak with the major. So I go in, and I found out after the fact. I had some guesses, but I found out later that the major's a Christian. And he said, so what changed from you wanting to quit to not wanting to quit? And I said, well, sir, I first off don't want to set a precedent in my life for quitting. I've never really quit anything major except porn. I've never really quit anything, and I don't want that to be something that I continue on in my life. I don't want that. And secondly, I believe that while this is a trial period, this 10 weeks will be over so fast. And in the grand scheme of my life, because I believe God called me to be here, I also believe he's going to call me to some much, much harsher and harder things in my life. And not because he hates me, not because, you know, he wants to make things hard for me, but because that's what he has in store as a believer, as a Christian. I will be persecuted. I know I'm going to face some stuff that's much more difficult than this. I know that I can make it through this because God has called me to be here.
Yeah.
And he kind of paused, said, I couldn't have said it better myself. And he said, I want you to know, though, it's only going to get harder. So he kind of gave me a little reassurance, but then at the same time, laid on some reality, which thankfully what he was referring to was physically harder. And at that point, I hadn't really been pushed over the edge physically, thankfully. I was fairly well prepared. So it didn't get too hard.
Yeah.
I tell you what, as soon as I had made that commitment to stay, it was like the next day, it may have even been that night, left and right, guys are asking me, like, McLean, why are you a Christian? Or, McLean, what are you reading in your Bible? Or, why does God do this? And it was just opportunity after opportunity to share the gospel. In my mind, I saw that as reassurance after reassurance that I had been called there by God.
Yeah.
And I've never in my life been someplace where every day I had to give an account for why I believed what I believed in. It was a great test, but also it was beautiful for me to get to just share Jesus with these guys who, while they're familiar with the church, they really don't know. They don't know the story of Jesus. They know his name, but they don't know that he came to earth as the Son of God to die on the cross for their sins, that he's a personal God, that he is intimately involved with them. And that's something that so many of them had a hard time wrapping their minds around, is that God is personal, because why would the God of the universe care about me?
Yeah.
That 100% alive from the enemy. No, the story didn't end there. 3 days after I had committed to staying, I don't want anyone to listen to this and be like, oh man, Cam, he heard that and he was just boom, good to go. Everything changed. It didn't. My heart was still not sold yet. My mind was, I knew that this is the right thing. And so in turn, I was physically staying, but I got an injury. I had an abscess on my foot, and it sounds really nasty, because it was. They had to drain it. They had to work on it over a period of days. And when I went in, so all that happened, me committing and whatnot, on, I believe it was a Wednesday. That Sunday, I went into medical they looked at my foot and it was like, oh man. And then next thing I know, they're inviting their doctor friend, their other doctors, to come in and look at my foot. And then another doctor comes in and looks at my foot. So it's kind of like my foot's the talk of the town here. When I wasn't that sure how bad it was, I thought it was just a nasty blister. Turned out to be cellulitis. They even came back later and said it tested positive for staph infection. So it was a little bit more serious than I realized.
Yeah.
But immediately, so they said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to aspirate it, poke it with a needle, and drain it. But if that doesn't work, we're going to have to lance it, which is slicing it open and then getting the infection out that way. If they said, if we lance it, you're not going to be fit to train. I mean, a lot of the training we do, occasionally going through kind of swampy area, which Lord only knows what's in that water. Definitely nothing you would want to get into your system. They can't afford to let me do that. They would have to send me home. They're saying this like, this poor guy, he's working to be here. We're going to have to send you home. I'm hearing that like, yes, yes, I get to go home. And in my mind, again, I'm rationalizing. I'm thinking of it like, you know, so often people have to give something up to God for him to only give it back to you. And I'm like, that's exactly what's happening. Lord, I see what you're doing. You know, you wanted me to give it up. You wanted me to want to be here. And then voila, I get to be free. I get to
go
step
home
out of this misery. Yeah. Go back to my comfortable life. That is not what he had in mind for me. It took me a couple days to figure that one out. For the first time, I got to speak with my parents that day. And I said to them, please pray that this either gets real bad real fast or it heals real fast, because I've got training stuff this week that I can't miss. If I'm on light duty because I'm injured, I won't be able to participate in the training. Either I don't miss it and I'm healed, I recuperate, or take me home. And I said, honestly, I'd love to go home. But the Lord did he pulled some strings and I healed real fast. And by about Wednesday, it was pretty much all cleared up and they had me fit for duty. And I remember, it's got to be the Holy Spirit that made me think of this. I remember sitting there thinking, I'm Jonah. Like, this is my Nineveh. I did not want to be here. The only difference is the Lord in his grace didn't let me leave. He allowed for me to be able to stay and had set it up in such a way that when I wanted to quit, I physically couldn't. And even so, when I was sick, he healed me, because this is truly where he's called me to be. And it kind of clicked in my mind. I wrote this to my parents. Lord forbid that I continue being Jonah here, because he got swallowed by a big fish. I don't want that to happen to me. And also, like, I know that I'm in Nineveh now. I need my heart to be here. He really did a work on me.
Yeah.
And I would never say I woke up each morning enjoying it. In fact, waking up each morning was the time of day when I wanted to quit the most, because waking up at 4:30 is not fun. Particularly
just like college,
particularly when
man.
You only had six. Yeah, it's just like college. Hardly. Particularly with 6 hours of sleep. So you're exhausted. I have never been so clearly where God wanted me to be. I believe that, you know, I've followed him and been places where, like, I know, like, the school I'm at, I know God's called me to be there. Like, this summer, being there, I felt invincible. And I use that word not to say that, like, nothing would happen to me, because stuff did. But I felt invincible because I knew that anything that could happen to me, anything that I might lose, be that a health thing or my family or whatever, didn't matter. Because the only thing that mattered was following God. The only thing that mattered was being where he wanted me to be, and that's right where I was. Like, anyone who listens to this, that's why I want to encourage them. There's no greater feeling in the world than following Jesus. Like, that's something that, now that I've experienced, like, really experienced that like that, I will never settle for less than that.
Yeah, it's tough
because
being,
that's the only way to live.
It's tough being smack dab in the middle of God's will.
Even
though you don't
want
to be there.
Yeah, it is, but he's got a way with hearts. He can do stuff with them.
I want everybody to watch the documentary Free Burma Rangers.
I watched it last night.
Did you? Well, and they're in a war zone, and they're raising their children in that. And it's amazing. And one of the best lines I took away from it was when they asked his wife, how can you raise your children in this environment? And she said, the safest place is right where God wants you. And
yes.
They're in the middle of war zones. Yeah, it was really cool.
What a testimony that is to their kids to see their parents living that out.
Do you have anything, the thoughts you got going there, Aaron? He looks like he's thinking.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking about all you said. Thank you for sharing your story. I was thinking just throughout my life as you shared those moments where knowing what God wanted me to do before I had to do it felt great. And then when I had to do it and it got hard, like all those moments I wanted to quit. And it kind of reminded me, I was reading the other day, like Jesus's baptism. Like here's this super high spiritual moment for him. And then he goes right into the desert. I've always thought of the desert as a place of weakness. And yet I think it's the other way around. Like the hard, arid, tough, suffering landscape isn't necessarily weakness. I think it's actually strength. Like he went there and when he comes out, he's like stronger and he's ready to go do ministry. And just as you were like sharing that, I don't think any of us want desert seasons in life where we're suffering or it's hard. But we will. And sometimes God brings us there. Like you said, I know God wanted me there. Like it was just clear, but I didn't want to be there. I don't know. As I've just seen this in my life and other Christians where when you find yourself in the desert, you just want to do everything you can to get out as soon as possible. And the hardest thing to do, but the best thing to do is to go, God, keep me here as long as you need me here. And then if you come out and you realize it was not a place of weakness. It was actually a place of strength and I'm stronger. And to hear your story is, to me, just evidence that it is always worth, you know, going where God calls. And sometimes that's really hard, but it's always worth it. And now just to think how much stronger you are. I mean, if you would have quit, you would have got comfortable quickly. But would your faith be as strong? Would your mind be as strong in your heart? And certainly probably your body too. I mean, amazing to hear that story and really good reminder, I think, for all of us who are trying to follow Jesus.
Yeah. In the Western cultures, especially, we're so comfortable. We have a comfortable house, the comfortable car with a comfortable wife and a comfortable kids and a comfortable dog. And we don't want to get uncomfortable yet. You know, we don't need Jesus if we're so comfortable. Desperate people need Jesus. And maybe sometimes we have to get more desperate because we are. Without Jesus, we should be absolutely desperate. And we just medicate ourselves with our comfort. So, thanks for sharing your story, Cam. Can't wait to see you down there in Taylor University.
Yeah, I look forward to having you there. The Dangerous Men guys are... they're all excited. They're amped up to get things rolling for this semester. I've stayed in contact with some of the guys in my group. They love it. They're 100% blessed by the work that you've done in their lives, Lowell, and they look forward to getting some Lowell time.
Thanks for listening. Go to dangerousmenunited.org where you can purchase the book, which is a small group curriculum, and there's a lot of other resources on the website. And don't forget, be a man to man, a warrior to demons, and always God's boy.